Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Have you got game? Got game on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Coming up this week, bang for your buck. How long does a game need to be worth the money you spend? The Assassin's Creed movie is finally in production, and we're kind of excited. What games would you put in the Video Game Hall of Fame? And we have reviews of Total War Attila and Risk.
Have you got game? The Lowdown.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Omen Qureshi. Christine Chubb is with me.
I am.
No Brian Calhoun.
No Calhoun.
That guy. What a lazy, lazy guy.
Where could he possibly be now?
I know he's been here for like 99.8% of our shows. He's missed the least amount of shows out of everybody in the history of the show. But where are you today, Calhoun?
But now you get to stick it to him.
Yeah.
Sticking it to him.
The truth be told, he's actually out trying to make his NASCAR dreams come true. He's currently turning left all over the city, just practicing. I don't know if he's actually going to go try out or not, but that's what he's doing. He's just turning left, making left turns around the city. So if you see him turning left, wave to him. Hi, Calhoun.
Hello.
Hello. Enjoy your left turns. But when when Brian is away, Patrick comes out to play.
Yay.
Hello, Patrick.
Hello. It's good to be
Patrick.
Back.
Go. Thanks for coming back. That's Patrick Luciani of 680 News. He has been on the show many, many times. Went to E3 with us a couple of years ago.
Good times.
It's coincidental this time, but you are sort of our PC go-to guy.
Yeah.
And you just happen to come back when there's a PC game to review today.
It's like fate. Brian knew, apparently.
Yeah. So you're going to review Total War Attila for us later on.
Yes.
We know you're a big fan of the Total War franchise, as it were. We just happened to ask you back, and you're like, hey, I played this game. Can I talk about it?
How convenient.
Let's do it. We'll be happy if you review Total War Attila for us. But how you been, man? How's your gaming been going for the last little while?
Good. A little slow. I'm holding out for a PlayStation 4. If my friends and family are listening, I want it for my birthday.
You sure you don't want it as a wedding present? What if we got it for you as a wedding present?
Yeah, my birthday is before the wedding, so
I see.
I'd want it sooner rather than later.
Now, how would your fiance feel if you opened up a wedding present and there was a PlayStation 4 inside?
I'd stop bugging her, I guess.
There you go.
I'm not spending the money on it, right? It goes to the wedding.
So. I know your fiance, and I know that she'd love the media capabilities of it, so she'd be all for that.
Yeah. Right, she'll use it. Yeah, she needs Netflix. All right,
so there you go. People listening in the Got Game audience, if you want to get Patrick a birthday / wedding present, PlayStation 4.
I can start a crowdfunding campaign.
Let's make it happen. Let's do that. We got lots to talk about this week. Like we said, Patrick's going to review Total War Attila. Brian Calhoun, even though he's not here right now, will show up through the magic of taping at another time, and he will be reviewing Risk for us, which he played, not the board game, based on the board game, but I believe he played it on one of his consoles. He has both the PS4 and the Xbox One, so we'll find out later which one he played it on. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about, but one of sort of the hot topics of this week has been the game The Order 1886. That is coming out soon, and Brian is going to review it for us on next week's show, but it's kind of garnered a lot of news because it's come out that the game isn't that long. Yeah. And when we say isn't that long, we mean it's pretty short, as in most of the things that we've read so far say the game is between 5 and 8 hours long, which at a max of 8 hours, the price being at about $70, that's kind of rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. So we thought we'd talk about it because this is not necessarily just about this game in particular, but gaming in general. We know the budget is tight and people can't afford as many games anymore. And so people usually pick one or two or three or four games throughout the course of a few months that they're going to get. And The Order, Christine, when we saw the trailer and stuff at E3, it knocked my socks off. I was like, whoa, this game looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But to find out it's only 8 hours, that's kind of like... You worked out the math there, Patrick, didn't you?
It's like the lowest amount of time to play the game, the 5 hours to complete it, it's like $14 an hour.
Yeah, that's pretty pricey.
For entertainment.
That's more than a movie. A movie's $14 for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So the question I pose to both of you, I'll go with you first, Christine, is what do you think? 8 hours of gameplay, does that turn you off or is that all right?
You know, I have to say, I was actually very disappointed about it. Like you said, when we saw this at E3, I was like super excited about it. And then as I've seen little bits of it since then, the excitement just kept building more and more and more. And I was honestly thinking this was going to be the game that I was going to get the PS4 for. That was going to be the deciding game where I was finally going to shell over the big bucks and get the new system because I really wanted to play this game. But the second I heard I could be finished it in a day, I was like, well, I'm definitely not buying that. Yeah, like, I'm not going to spend $600 or whatever it is for both the system, a brand new system and the game for, you know, at the most 8 hours. That's to completion, too. That is like 8 hours of all the like direct gameplay, 100% done. That's not enough for me.
Yeah, 8 hours for 100% of the mission. That's pretty short.
If you're an achievement hunter and want like a complete game, $70 for like, I don't know, 20 trophies or whatever would be pretty steep. It seems like too much for too little.
Mm-hmm.
The Walking Dead, for instance, that game wasn't very long.
No.
But it wasn't as expensive.
Well,
and I came away like the better for it. It was a great game. I mean, if it was 8 hours, I spent $70 on it and my mind was blown.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But most of the reviews are really bad.
Well, Moment and I were actually discussing this the other day, and I was using Telltale Games as a comparative because they're usually, you know, five episodes, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours of gameplay each episode for $20. Well, right there, even at 2 hours an episode, that's 10 hours of gaming for $20. That's more than this is for like a third of the price.
Yeah. Okay, so let's play devil's advocate here. I've seen a few people who cover gaming tweet out things like, I would rather have 5 hours or 8 hours of good gameplay versus 20, 25 hours of mediocre or average or bad gameplay, which is fair enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get it. That's a very valid point, that if it was 5 to 8 hours of good gameplay, then whatever, I'll take it over multiple hours, like many more hours of bad gameplay. But I also think that in this day and age, when you're dropping that kind of coin, and you have to remember, the bar has been set a certain way in this business, you know, like, if a game doesn't have a lot of gameplay, like a Call of Duty, let's say, the actual mission mode probably isn't longer than 10 hours, but it's multiplayer that carries that game, and it's multiplayer that is the reason that people are driven to play that game, and this game doesn't have any of that. Then you have games like Uncharted or The Last of Us or other games of that genre that do have long gameplays and in-depth stories that kind of hook you in. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have our review next week, but by all accounts, so far, the reviews of this game are not good. So, I mean, that's also the thing, too. But again, this isn't necessarily about the Order 1886. This is just about gaming in general and whether you're willing to pay that kind of money or not. And I think I get the argument of I'd rather have a few hours of really good gameplay versus a lot of bad gameplay, but I still think 8 hours is kind of a short amount of time.
Well, I did post the question this week after this all came out on Twitter, and I did get a couple of replies from people. Kyle wrote to me and said, 8 hours of gameplay is fine by him. He very rarely has the time to play through 50-plus hours, which is understandable, because as an RPG fan, I'm used to having, 20 to 40 hours of gameplay where it's like one game will last me a few months of play. I'm still playing Dragon Age Inquisition. I'm coming up on, like, 90 hours.
Again, to be devil's advocate here, I'm not a person who likes 100 hours of gameplay either.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want my game to be 50 hours or 100 hours. I think somewhere in the ballpark of like 25 to 30 is what I like, because that'll take me a little while to get through. But I don't like massively long games. But I think the most important thing for me is that the game is good. If it's a good game and it's a gripping 8 hours that gets me through it, then I guess I'd be all right with it. But again, it's kind of steep for the price. What else did you get?
I also got a response from our friend Matt May saying 5 to 8 hours is okay if what's there is high quality without a multiplayer option. So he's fine with that kind of gameplay time. Our friend Brendan St. Clair, who has been on the show a few times, says, I don't think I'd care that much. I'd gladly pay $15 for a good 90-minute movie. The math scales kind of close, so he's fine with it as well. So I was kind of surprised at how optimistic it was. However, my friend Ollie, who lives in England, his response was years. That was his minimum amount of time he wants a game to last for $70. Years.
You are listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're just talking about the new game, The Order 1886. Rumors are that but people have played it say that it lasts between 5 and 8 hours. Brian will review the game for us next week. But we put the question out on Twitter on our Got Game account. Christine, we had a few people write back. Jonathan Orr, who's tweeted back and forth with us a few times and always a big gamer, says, it makes me think that game prices might be better set by genre rather than its budget, which is an interesting thing to think about. Now, budget obviously plays a big part into it, because if the studio spends X amount of millions of dollars, they got to make that back. So that's obviously a big factor. But he's kind of right. A game like Skyrim, which is hundreds of hours of gameplay, in theory could cost more than a game like this, which is less playtime. Then we had our friend Chris Tarosa, who wrote us and said, length isn't an issue. 8 hours isn't bad at all. But from what I've heard, the gameplay just isn't there. So it's a pass for me. Interesting. He says, I was already on the fence about it, but the reviews tipped me over. So that's an interesting take. And then we had Chris R. Smith, who wrote in and say, 8 hours is too short for $70. I want 20 hours. It sounds like it will be a used game pickup or watch the cutscenes on YouTube.
I saw a great tweet. It wasn't directed at us, but they wrote that the order makes them wish that Blockbuster was still around.
Yeah.
So that he could just rent it, play it, enjoy the experience if he was going to enjoy it, and then be done with it.
It sounds like this is the perfect game to rent.
Yeah, and you know, that's such a great point. I mean, I used to work at Blockbuster for 3 years. I spent working there. And game rentals was such a big part of what we did, especially mm-hmm. on like Friday and Saturday nights. We'd be filled up with people renting games. And that's a real kind of big gap in the market. I know there are still a few places where you can go and rent games, but it's not as prevalent as it used to be. And there are certain games out there where if you can spend like $7 or $8 renting it, and then just kind of get through it as much as you can, especially for a game that's 8 hours. You rent it one weekend, you're done, you take it back, you're finished.
Yeah.
There are enough games out there, to justify it. We've got The Last of Us. That could have been a rentable.
Absolutely.
I mean, I was fine spending the money for it, but that could be a rentable game, right?
Any sports game.
You could power through that over a weekend. Any sports game,
Any sports game you could rent, no problem. I didn't even think of that. That's a very interesting point.
The thing that I think a lot of people have complained about as well with the order is that we're also hearing there's a lot of cutscenes in it. So although the gameplay, the campaign takes, you know, as much as 8 hours to fill, well, if half of that is cutscenes, you're really only getting 4 hours of doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And when I was thinking back this morning about all the games that I've played through the main campaign, I think I felt the most satisfied with some of the LEGO games. The campaigns have been about 10 to 15 hours, mm-hmm. usually a max at around 13, actually. And by that time, I feel like I've played enough. I'm done. That's good. I'm over with. Granted, the game always makes me mad when it's like, you have reached 22%. I'm like, I've played it for 13 hours.
but that's one of those games, though, right? Where you can keep going back and keep doing more and keep doing more. That's much like a Skyrim, where you can keep going back and you can keep doing more. And I think you're right. There's a certain type of game, like a Lego game is a perfect example. I can't play that for more than an hour or 90 minutes at a time. Once I get to that point, I reach my max. I'm like, I got to turn this off. I got to walk away.
But that's at least a couple weekends worth of gaming
as well.
It's not just like, here's my one game I'm going to play this week. And I find if the game is, especially if it's like 5 hours, that's, you know, a couple hours on a Saturday, a couple hours on a Sunday, then you're done. It's like, well, that wasn't worth it.
You know, I'm curious. If you are out there listening and you know of a place where you can rent games, let us know at GotGame590 or GotGame@Sportsnet590.ca. Let us know if there's a place you can rent games from, or if you miss renting games, if this is a game that you would rent if you didn't buy it. And please feel free to answer, throw your thoughts in on this as well, as to whether you think $70 is too much for 8 hours, or if you're okay with the length of time for the game.
That's made me think, what happens, what if in the future Xbox and Sony decide to, instead of having through their stores, instead of having buying them, they give you the option to rent the game? Whereas a game like this, which people may be dissuaded about by the $70, if they could rent it for the weekend through the digital download for, say, $40 or $20 or whatever it would be, maybe that would actually boost sales again, because they'd be more willing to be like, all right, well, I'll just, you know, I'll play it for this amount and then it's fine. If I'm not done by the weekend, then it goes away. But chances are you're going to be.
I forgot the name of the service, Gamefly.com.
Oh, yeah.
You can go on there and they'll ship you games, but I've never used it. I don't even know how efficient it is or how...
No. I've never used it either. But let us know what you think about this topic. I'm curious to see what people think. And for those of you who wrote in, thanks for putting in your 2 cents. We've got a lot more to come up on this episode, including what games would you put in the Video Game Hall of Fame? Think about it. Join us with an answer coming up next on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. We've got game. Do you? In the game.
You're back listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Momin Qureshi, Christine Chubb, my usual co-host sitting with me, our third of the triad, trifecta, tripod, whatever you want to call.
Force.
Triforce. Hey, that's...
There you go.
I like that I brought up every reference except for an actual video game reference.
Yeah, that's why. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, that's why you're on the show. That's why I've been here for a few years. Brian Calhoun is not here this week. He's missing... It's a very rare occasion where Calhoun is not here, but unfortunately scheduling just made it so that he couldn't be here this week, although he will be here next segment.
Through the magic of radio.
Through the magic of radio. He will be here to talk about his review for the video game Risk based on the board game, but I don't believe it's the actual board game. Calhoun will talk more about that coming up next. So if you love Brian and you miss him that much, We don't. You can go ahead and listen to it in the next. I kid, Brian. I kid. I love you. I miss you. But here in his place is Patrick Luciani. He has been kind enough to take some time away from the 680 edit desk to jump in.
Yeah.
You're going to join us next segment as well to talk about Total War Attila, which, you know, you love those games. If you missed it, last segment, we talked a bit about gameplay and how long is enough gameplay for $70 because the new game, The Order 1886, is only about 5 to 8 hours. You can send us your thoughts at GotGame590 on Twitter or GotGame at Sportsnet590.ca. Now, Christine.
Yes.
You are a huge Assassin's Creed fan.
I don't know what gave you that impression.
It's all the Assassin's gear and the fact that you come with your hood up all the time.
It's very true, I do.
It's kind of spooky.
Now, it's funny, because Calhoun doesn't like to talk about this kind of stuff.
No.
But he's not here.
Aha!
So we can talk about it.
Yeah, we can.
The Assassin's Creed movie,
yes,
which I've been talking about for a long time, and then they announced they're going to make, it's in production.
It is,
It's systems go. They're going for it.
It's very exciting.
And not only are they going for it, we have a release date.
Everything.
Yeah.
That was fast.
I know.
So it's coming out in December of next year.
December the 21st is the rough release
date.
Although for an Assassin's Creed thing, I thought they should have put it as November, because that is always the release dates for the games.
Should they put it like on Guy Fawkes Day or something?
That would be very good.
The brains, the noggin's working sometimes.
I like it.
Yeah, move over, V for Vendetta.
Take that.
But it's December 21st of next year, so you have to wait a while for it, almost 2 years. You'll have to wait until this movie comes out.
That's fine, because it just started filming, right. So they can take all the time they want to make this good.
But the reason we bring it up is because the cast, you know, we've watched a lot of video game adaptations.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority have been awful.
Terrible. Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
Just terrible.
Brutal movies.
Yeah.
And they really haven't ever had anybody terribly good in them. I mean, Prince of Persia had Jake Gyllenhaal in it. Fair enough.
And obviously, what's-her-face sexy lips for Lara Croft.
Yes, of course, Angelina Jolie.
That may be the exception.
Her name actually is What's-Your-Face Sexy Lips Angelina Jolie,
you know,
UN Ambassador. That's her full title.
On her driver's license, that is the full name. Now it's Slash Pit.
Yeah, that's right. Slash Pit. We forgot that part. But this game, this movie has a really strong cast.
It really does.
We already knew that Michael Fassbender, aka Magneto,
who is the best pick for this.
Yeah, also been nominated for an Oscar for 12 Years a Slave, has been in a lot of other stuff. He is going to play the lead character, the assassin.
The assassin.
But also, multiple time Oscar nominee and Oscar winner Marion Cotillard is going to be in this.
Let me tell you, I couldn't have picked a more perfect actress to be thrown in to the Assassin's Creed franchise. Like, when I heard that this was happening, I was just, it was a drop the mic moment. I was like, that's perfect. Like, having played all of the games in the franchise, all of the women have this distinctly beautiful European but strong, kind of dedicated to their craft, kind of women to them, and she is perfect. Like, I'm so glad that they didn't go the way of like a more of American looking woman. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Scarlett Johansson, but she would have been so wrong for this movie. But
was she rumored for a while?
No, but I'm just thinking of like some kind of American actress who they would throw in. But she's perfect. Like, this is a one of the best castings I could have ever thought of for an Assassin's Creed movie.
Yeah, I mean, she is French.
Yeah.
She's won Oscars,
or
I think an Oscar, but she's been nominated a few times. She's nominated again. This is Oscar Sunday, the day this show comes on. So if you're listening on Sunday morning, she's nominated for an Oscar tonight.
Mm-hmm.
She probably won't win because Julianne Moore's probably going to win for Still Alice, but she's up for an Oscar. And you're right. She speaks French, so if they make the character French, they can just leave her accent the same. She won't have to change it.
Good. No Americans pretending to be French.
Yeah, so they can just keep it as is. But I'm excited about this.
I think Christine already booked the time off to go see this movie.
Yeah, you got that right. She's going to camp out Star Wars style and set up her chairs.
It's just before Christmas. I'm so excited. It's my early Christmas present to myself.
Early.
We come from a history of, like we said, pretty brutal video game movies.
Mm-hmm.
But this game is Ubisoft Studios themselves is making this game. They opened up a film division of their studio.
Yeah.
They have two pretty A-list actors making this. Do you guys feel confident that this is going to be hopefully a decent movie?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah. I feel confident in it. Just the actual game itself plays almost like a movie in terms of its storyline. I can see it being successful.
I think it'll be successful.
But good. I mean, good. Successful, good, right? It can't be bad. I guess it can be bad and successful.
Look, 50 Shades of Grey is the number 50 Shades of Grey is the number one movie in the country right now.
Yeah,
so let's just... apparently, bad movies can be successful.
That's true.
That's true. But I'm hopeful in the fact that Assassin's Creed has not only been a beautiful franchise to look at gameplay-wise, but they've had such strong storylines in the past. I mean, there's obviously been one or two exceptions. but I'm hoping that really shines through in this. It kind of seems like, to me, an easy franchise to make a movie out of,
sure,
because there's so many possibilities, not only with the idea of the European assassin, but the modern day kind of Abstergo thing. I mean, it's kind of got the perfect nexus of brilliance for modern cinema.
It's got a great backdrop for
They pretty much have a storyboard already written for them.
Yeah.
They just
got to
pick which one they're going
to
do.
I think what's good about the potential for Assassin's movies too is that they'd all be kind of period pieces because mm-hmm. they're all set in certain eras, but they can move it around and they can, in theory, change up the cast as they go.
Yeah.
Like Fassbender can play the assassin a couple times and then they can bring in somebody else because that's the way the franchise has gone, is they do different stories about different assassins in different time periods.
That's right.
And so they can roll with the punches and just change it up as they go.
And the way the game franchise has gone is that in the last few games, they've really changed up what the Ezio games were all about and the background to the assassin's character, where it's still there, like it's still a whole like modern day versus the past and your ancestry, but they've changed it up where it's like you said, it can be anybody. They could be go to Europe, they could go to Asia, they could come to North America. All of these are possibilities, and you just really have to make it work visually and story-wise. And I think that hopefully if they have great writers and if they have a good director and a good DP, you can make wonderful things happen.
At GotGame590 and GotGame at Sportsnet590.ca. Are you excited for this Assassin's movie? Do you care about who's in it? Are you worried that it'll fall into the lexicon of terrible video game movies? Or are you somewhat optimistic? I mean, obviously we won't know until December 21st of next year.
Yes.
But are you optimistic about what could come out of this? So let us know what you think. You've been great with your responses, so let us find out. You're listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Momin Qureshi, Christine Chubb, Patrick Lugiani sitting in for the out-of-studio Brian Calhoun right now, but Brian will be back with us next segment to talk about Risk. In the meantime, we want to talk about the fact that a video game Hall of Fame is opening up in Rochester, New York.
Just a stone's throw away.
So if you want, I for one propose Got Game road trip.
Yeah. I like it.
Provided they're all left turns, Brian can get there.
We'll pack some sandwiches and we'll head on down.
Yeah, it'll be like the movie The Wizard, but we're not going to a competition. We're going to the Hall of Fame. I call Fred Savage.
I never saw The Wizard. So.
Neither did I.
Okay.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
You both have never seen the movie The Wizard?
No.
Okay, hang on. Time out.
Oh, Moment's the odd man out here.
We have to deviate from
Moment's
this topic.
Seen The Wizard?
We have to deviate from this topic. Okay, hang on. If you cover boxing or a boxer, you have to have seen Raging Bull and Rocky.
Yes.
Okay.
Right? If you play baseball or cover baseball, you have to have seen Field of Dreams and Bull Durham.
Okay.
Or The Natural.
Or
right?
Sandlot.
Right. If you play hockey, you need to watch Slapshot and the Mighty Ducks. If you cover video games, you can't not have seen The Wizard.
Or you can just enjoy the things that you're doing and not have to be focused on the cinematics.
The Wizard
of
with Fred Savage when he goes to the tournament because he's got that brother that's super into gaming, and that's where they reveal Super Mario Brothers 3. And they first introduced the Nintendo Power Glove. None of that, you guys.
I didn't see
this is,
God.
I think, maybe an age difference thing.
You are the same. We're close to the same age.
Yeah, but you know, Patrick
but at
is
heart,
younger.
But at
well,
heart.
Patrick, Patrick, maybe. Maybe.
Yes.
But you, Christine. Like
maybe by that time I was already watching Tarantino films.
Unacceptable.
Know.
I'm just going to sit back and watch
out,
this.
This movie came out like in 1987 or 88.
Well, all right. So, but I was already.
Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry.
I was already on my way to my expanding film degree-ness. So.
And they didn't. What? The Wizard wasn't mandatory watching in Film 101?
Surprisingly, at Carleton, it was not the number
your
one
professor
film.
Your professor didn't walk in with a beret and say, The Wizard is a Zhejun movie that you need to watch?
Yeah, it was like, you know, you've heard about Citizen Kane, but here is the better Fred Savage movie you should be watching.
Fred Savage was in Citizen Kane?
No.
It's like Citizen Kane, Apocalypse Now, The Wizard, Godfather. That's like the way the list goes.
Really? You would put The Godfather at the fourth?
Yeah. You've got homework to do.
Okay,
tonight,
you know what? Yeah. Again, on Twitter, at GotGame590, am I wrong? Or do you have to have watched The Wizard to be in the position to like be in this business? Obviously, you can play games and review without watching, but my mind is just shattered right now. I don't understand how people who work in this business haven't seen The Wizard. Come on.
Oops.
Come on. But getting back to the Video Game Hall of Fame, which we were talking about, It brought up an interesting question for us as to which games would you like to see in the Video Game Hall of Fame? I mean, there's the obvious, like a Pac-Man would obviously be in there, or Tetris would have to be in there.
Your head immediately goes to retro games,
yeah.
Of course.
But Skyrim needs to be in there.
Yeah, yes. I would say so. Halo would have to be in there for me,
yes.
too, if you're going to have a Hall of Fame.
Yeah, more modern. If we're looking at more modern things, I think yeah. that's definitely yeah. those two are. I mean, instantly, my first thought was one of my first gaming experiences, which was Zork.
Yep.
Which was the lovely game with the green letters yeah. everywhere.
That's a text adventure, right?
Yeah. It was.
Yeah. The most classic and Hall of Fame of Hall of Fame of Hall of Fame games has to be Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
I would think. I mean, there, you have to go back to some Atari titles, though, like Missile Command, Asteroids, okay. soon to be Asteroids, another version of the game, which is coming up. We talked about that last week. I would think a game like The Last of Us, which was like such a big home run
yep.
a couple years ago. I would like to see that in the Hall of Fame.
I guess it depends what they're looking for in the world of Hall of Fame. Like if you're talking about just like game-changing games, mm-hmm. like where it's like the industry was never the same after this game came out. Or if it's just like it was commercially successful and people really liked
yeah.
it. You know, I mean, if you're talking about the kind of game-changing platforms, I mean, you have to talk about really the transitional games, like a lot of things that Sega would bring out. Like you'd have to think about GoldenEye type
yeah.
things, where it was like these are
Wolfenstein
games that,
and Doom. Yeah,
yeah, these are the games that changed the way yeah. that gaming existed before that.
There are certain, like, you have to look at types of games, a Call of Duty or a Halo, because they really kind of amped up the way first-person shooters are viewed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Even a game like the Uncharted series, which to me totally changed the way third-person action adventures are done, because it really amped up the importance of story. Then there's classic games that you have to look at, certain sports games you would have to put in there. You're a PC guy, Patrick. Which
PC
games
would you
throw
in there? You know what I was just thinking about? Counter-Strike.
Oh, yeah?
Because not only was that, you know, a big PC first-person shooter game, but it was also kind of the crux of Major League Gaming, mm-hmm. of, like, that mm-hmm. actual league and competitive gameplay and all that stuff.
Like Counter-Strike. What about Quake?
Quake there, too. Yeah, that'd be tough. Probably Quake, I guess.
I imagine World of Warcraft would have its own little section
yeah.
there.
Oh, yeah, it has yeah. to be in there.
This is kind of a popular and, you know,
yeah.
PC-changing
yeah.
things.
You know what would definitely be in the Video Game Hall of Fame? The Wizard starring Fred Savage.
Moment's so bitter.
I'm going to Google it. I got to know.
Don't Google it. Go on Netflix or whatever your service is and go find it.
Is it on Netflix?
It.
It's not.
I don't know. It better be.
Yeah, just
find it somewhere. It's got to be up there. I don't know what to say.
Christian Slater. Later is in it.
I forgot about that. I'm so mad that I have to end this segment now. We're going to come back in a bit, and we're going to have Brian Calhoun join us to talk about Risk, and Patrick's going to talk about Total War Attila. And well, those reviews are coming up next on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Go watch The Wizard.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. We've got game. Do you? Gameplay.
You're back listening to the third and final segment of Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Omen Qureshi. Christine Chubb is with me. Brian Calhoun is not here. Yet.
Ooh.
Yet?
Yes.
But
good
he will
tease.
Be in a few minutes to talk about Risk, which he played on one of his consoles. We'll find out which one it was. It's based on the popular board game, which I've actually recently started playing again.
Really?
Yeah,
I haven't played Risk in years.
You know, I hadn't played in years either, but then my cousins and I have really gotten into board gaming lately, so we play like a lot of Settlers of Catan, which I know Patrick
yeah.
loves. I played it with you before.
Risk starts fights.
Yeah, it does.
It does.
Especially when you play in family.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's
so
bad.
We play a whole bunch of different games, and my cousin came home. He's like, look what I got. And I looked at I was like, yes. Oh, no. Because it really does start to tear people
apart. I've only played it once, yeah, and I was, yeah. and then my friend got mad at me because I won, and I'd never played it before, and I was just like, I don't know how I won.
You want to know why it causes fights? Two words. Backstabbing.
Yeah.
It happens a lot in that game. You think you got an alliance with somebody, and then the knife goes in your back, and it's
terrible.
I just
used to play Scrabble. That was what I used to play.
It
there
was
wasn't a lot of
friendly.
Knife
well,
stabbing.
Well, not my family. That causes fights in my family,
okay.
too. Well, pretty much any board game will cause a fight in my family.
I can just picture sometimes why throwing the desk in the air and...
Which country is it inside Ukraine in Seinfeld?
Ukraine will smash.
Yeah. Ukraine is a powerful country.
Yeah.
But Patrick Luciani, that voice you heard there, is sitting in yeah. with us this week in place of Brian, good guy that he is from 680 News. And he's going to talk about, Patrick, it seems like every time we have you on, you talk about some sort of PC gaming.
Yeah.
Because that is one of your fortes.
It is.
You're a big fan of the Total War series.
I am.
And you played Total War Attila.
I did.
Am I to assume Attila means Attila the Hun?
It is.
Ooh.
Attila the Hun.
All right.
Yes. Before I start the review, I would just like to say, dear developers, please stop releasing first day DLC. It's sad.
It's a little insulting.
It is. It's insulting.
It's a little insulting.
I didn't want to say it at first, but now, yeah, it is. It's insulting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, hang on to it for a month.
Yes.
And then put it out. It's less insulting. We still know that it was ready a long time ago, but it's less insulting to the player.
We know it's in the game. It's in the game, what you unlock with this DLC. You're just, I'm paying $8 to turn a key so I can play three extra factions.
Did you buy it?
I bought it in advance. I bought the game in advance, so it comes with the DLC in advance. But if you don't pre-order the game, which is arguably a good decision with Creative Assembly after Rome 2, like after that fiasco, I said I wouldn't pre-order a game ever again. I'm going to review this game, so I'm going to pre-order it in this case. But it's tough to justify that before I see reviews. I mean, we just saw it with The Order.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the actual game, and my phone just died, so my notes are gone, so I'm going to do this off the top of my head. The actual game, Creative Assembly actually did it. They redeemed themselves from Rome 2, and it's a decent game. It came out complete. I haven't actually encountered... I've played like 20 hours so far, and I haven't encountered a single bug in the game.
That's good.
That's very
impressive. That's kind of rare, actually.
And especially with what was released 2 years ago with Rome 2. So it was refreshing. Like Moman said, this takes place like at the cusp of the Dark Ages. The powerful Roman Empire has been split into two factions. Attila the Hun is sweeping westward into Europe, and they capture the atmosphere very well. In the previous iteration of the series, it was very romantic, the classical period, you know, bringing civilization to what they would call barbarians and all this stuff. Right now, everything's like bad.
Nice.
Like, you know, civilizations are being burnt to the ground, and even just the actual campaign map and the actual real-time battles, both are very dark. They do a very good job of making it seem like it is the Dark Ages and, you know, all hope is lost.
Nice.
In terms of actual gameplay, the look and the feel of Attila, it feels like an expansion pack to Rome 2. Remember expansion packs?
Mm. Yeah.
It feels like one of those. The pricing's like, it was like $45 Canadian. So it's not like the $70 you dished out for Rome.
Yeah.
So it is price fair, I guess, I would say.
And you paid $45 and you've already got 20 hours of
exactly,
gameplay.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And the gameplay, it feels more like an expansion than an actual new start to a game. And I think the Total War series kind of needs a fresh restart. I mean, they reintroduced something like family trees that angered a lot of people for not having in Rome 2. It added a lot of depth to the game in Attila. You can now, you know, assign governors to regions so your generals aren't just sitting around doing nothing when they're not leading armies. But they added a few things, but for the most part, it's still the campaign portion of the game. If you haven't played it, there's a campaign portion, and then, you move armies around the campaign map, and when two armies fight or when you besiege a settlement, it zooms down into a real-time battle. That's the meat of the game, really. That's where Total War shines.
Mm-hmm.
The campaign still lacks depth from what the actual battles contain. You can now pillage settlements, just burn them straight to the ground. And it's interesting halfway through the game when you actually start exploring more of the map, you come into vast swaths of area that used to be like the Roman Empire is now like absolutely nothing. It's just desolate area. You can repopulate those desolate areas, but it costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So they've added a lot of new aspects to this game, but It still kind of feels like Rome 2.
Yeah.
And it's not as revolutionary as past games have been, good or bad. It's still not as revolutionary. It feels more like a download or an expansion rather than an actual game. That's not to say it's a bad thing, because they've brought over everything that was missing from the original from the Rome 2 series. Siege battles are good now. Like, the AI knows what it's doing. It's not getting stuck somewhere and just, like, running in circles. They actually added a new element to the game where if you have certain units that are marauders, I believe it's called. I'm not 100% sure on that. I can't remember. But they'll go through the settlement, and they'll start burning your settlement down. So all the buildings will start to catch fire, and then that fire will spread. The downside is you need a pretty good PC to actually get the full effect of this. My PC's 5 years old, but it's still mid-range.
Yeah.
And I still get the idea of it, but when you're zoomed out from the city, you don't see it on fire until you kind of get closer to the buildings. But, I mean, as you burn the settlement down, it affects the morale of the defenders in the city, so you could just kind of just sit back and burn the town with catapults.
Burn it to the ground.
Yeah, exactly. And then go in, and then by the time you make it in there, everyone's already freaking out. but it adds a lot of depth to it, and it makes everything seem a little darker, appropriately, I guess, called the Dark Ages,
there
right?
There you go.
But you feel like all humanity is lost, and, you know, the Huns are coming to burn everything down, which actually happened, and they captured this section of history fairly well, a section of history that doesn't really get covered in games, and kind of gets glossed over because, you know, you see the Eastern and the Western Roman Empire and you immediately think Rome, and, you know, you don't think about the Middle Ages and all that stuff. And then when you mention the Middle Ages, you just think medieval total war, right? Which I'm sure is going to be the next iteration of the franchise after this.
So what do you think? What kind of score are you going to give this?
I'm going to give this a 7.5.
Nice.
It's not close to an 8, only because it still kind of feels like it's past game. It just feels more like an expansion than the actual game. But they did improve leaps and bounds over the previous game, which required 15 patches.
All right, 7.5 from Patrick Luciani for Total War Attila. And now, as promised, we're joined in studio by Brian Calhoun, who's dropped in to join us to talk about Risk, which you played for your PS4. Brian, this is obviously a popular board game, but this is not the board game?
It's Risk. I mean, come on. It's Risk. We know exactly what's going to be going in. It's a new generation of console hardware, so obviously it gives Hasbro... Is there anyone other than Hasbro making board games these days, or is that just, like, only Hasbro?
I don't know. I don't know if Milton Bradley still makes games, or...
I'm not really a board game guy. The last game I've played that doesn't actually involve a computer is Cards Against Humanity, which it's not a board game, but you understand exactly how deep I go into card games and board games. That's all I play. I haven't even played poker in years.
It's weird. I am a board game guy. I play board games all the time. I don't know who makes, like, Settlers of Catan or Munchkin or all the games that I play. I don't pay attention to who makes it.
Okay, well, I pay even less attention to it, so I'm not entirely sure. But what we can easily say is that this is, as I said before, Ubisoft, EA, Activision, anyone who has a board game license, who makes a board game, it's their chance to make all those board games again. Last generation, it was Risk Factions, which wasn't a huge departure from Risk, just a few cosmetic changes. Now with a new console generation, here's a new Risk game. And this one's actually kind of cool in terms of visuals. It's all very Tron-looking. The setup is that you are this commander of this army, because it's Risk, and you have to lead them through this whole battle. I don't know if I really have to set up Risk for anybody. I think that's kind of that's something that people can figure out by themselves. But once you actually get into the gameplay is set up that you are in this war room and you're looking over. You remember when we went to Ubisoft Toronto and they did the demonstration of the Splinter Cell sort of control room?
Yeah.
And they had this, like, really cool computer in the center that they all stood around, and it's their control center. Do you remember that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's exactly that. So you're standing over one of these control computer, like, islands, I want to call them, like a kitchen island, if you will. And you make all your moves through there. And once you actually are looking down on the island, it's this really cool, futuristic, Tron-like aesthetic. Every territory is done in a bold neon color and filled in with a lighter neon color. There are tanks and planes that represent your pieces as you go up against, like, another territory. When you roll the dice, the dice roll happens, and then the results are shown, and then whoever wins gets to blow up the other guy with their tanks and planes. You don't really get to control. It's just a nice visual flair. So that is basically the setup of Risk, which I hope I've explained properly. I don't know. I've been pretty vague because, as I keep saying, it's Risk. I really don't know how much I need to explain about Risk.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much straightforward what Risk is. Risk is just battling over territory using your army.
So once you actually get into gameplay, there's three types of gameplay. World domination, which is basically classic Risk, where you got to take over everything. Capitals, which you put a capital down. And secret missions, where, well, let's just say your mission is take over the continent of Australia, for example.
Okay.
It gives you objectives that you have to do, and they're not, like, straightforward take over all this world. It's like, once you get this one thing done, there you go.
Oh, then it's game over.
Yeah.
Oh.
And there's a third one.
And your opponent doesn't know what your mission is?
No, it's all, everyone gets a secret mission, and once you take care of it, you win. And
so you try to, like, mislead your opponents into what your mission is?
See, you could do that if you wanted to. Right. I will not claim to be that great of a Risk player.
Okay.
I would not claim to be, like, some sort of secret mastermind general.
Yeah.
If you want to mislead the people playing against you, yeah, I mean, you'd have an easier time, but I'm not going to claim to be that guy.
For me, I still love Risk, and I actually just started playing Risk again a few weeks ago with my cousins. It's a game I used to play a lot when I was a kid and a teenager, and then it went away for a while, but now there's definitely been a board game renaissance in the last few years, and Risk came back on the table at my cousin's house, and it almost tore my family apart, because that's just the kind of game it is.
It is the game of both world and family domination.
Yeah, you got that right.
Speaking speaking of families, I'm not totally sure exactly how many people have the capability of tapping a resource like the Crushies, which
not many.
Are a lot of you.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to announce that multiplayer, even at like midnight on a Thursday, I was looking for games, and I would find multiple games.
Right.
It was not that hard to find a game of Risk to get going.
Oh, you mean online? That's pretty good.
Yeah. No, I ran into a bunch of like guys from Alberta, and they were up at, I guess it was 2 o'clock, whatever. No, it'd be midnight their time, 2 o'clock my time at some point. Just a bunch of Canadian Alberta guys playing Risk.
Nice.
It was weird. And it was cool that I was able to find multiple games, even at those strange hours.
Yeah, so that's always a plus, because that's always a big thing when you get a game and you want a game online, is the fact that you can get online, but you kind of hope that there's people online to play with you. And obviously the big games like Call of Duty or whatever will have lots of people, but sometimes the game like this, it's hit and miss. So I'm glad to see that you hit and there was a lot of people to play with you.
Yeah, so we are quickly running out of time. I'll quickly note that the AI, it's cool to play online with other people. Playing by yourself can be kind of boring because the AI is very hit or miss. Or one note would be a better way to describe it. Some of them are very aggressive. Some of them are very defensive. Mm. So once you figure out what sort of AI it is, it's not that hard to just figure out how to beat them. The menus are a little clunky. There was this one weird issue where we loaded up an online lobby for 5 people. We could only find 4. And since we couldn't find a 5th person, the game wouldn't launch. So there are weird sort of instances like that. The menus in the system are not great. They're just, they're really bare bones and they don't really work all that well. So that's kind of an issue. I mean, it doesn't really take away from the gameplay, but just makes getting to a game of Risk a little bit more of a hassle. Because you need to know how many people you want to play online with before you actually start a game. And if you're playing with random people, who knows how that's going to work. And I'm also going to say that this game needs a better way to accelerate gameplay, especially when you're playing by yourself, because you can make everything go really, really fast, but you got to hit that button every time the AI does anything. So that's kind of annoying. There really should just be a setting that says at the beginning of every game, why don't you just rush everything that's not me? And then when we come back to me, I'll play the game. Stuff
like
that.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they don't have that. That's usually a standard function.
They do. It's not great.
Okay.
It's a very poorly implemented part of the game. It doesn't work very well. And it's very confusing. So it's in there, but it's just, it needs to be better. So I'm going to give Risk a 7 out of 10 simply because it doesn't really change Risk. It's just more Risk. Now, it's good Risk. I found myself enjoying it. I found the gameplay to be decent, but it's something that, hey, we have a new console generation. Let's make a new Risk. So here's a new Risk. So 7 out of 10.
All right, that's all the time we have for this week. So for Brian Calhoun, who was just with us, Christine Chubb, Patrick Luciani, thanks for sitting in, buddy.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.